Blog Talk Radio.
This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Our show tonight, of course, is Abolishing Probate, number 11, and we're going to be talking about families abused by a corrupt system. As many of you know, there's a lot of research involved in what's going on. We have to look at the law. We have to look at U.S. Code and Title. We have to look at all these arbitrary statutes that were erected specifically to do an end run around the Constitution. But I read something very interesting today in my digging around and researching, and it's a judge. And he says, this is Judge Daniel Horowitz is blasting Judge Richard Posner for his jaw-dropping admission. He doesn't think judges should spend 1 second studying the Constitution of the United States. I thought, what? And he said recently, he's the chief judge of the Seventh Court, Circuit Court of Appeals. He argued that judges should not spend any of their time studying the original tent of the Constitution. He said, I see absolutely no value to a judge of spending decades, years, months, weeks, days, hours, minutes, or seconds studying the Constitution or the history of its enactment or its amendments and its implementation. He said, he goes on later on down there, he said, the Supreme Court treats the Constitution like it is an authorizing it like it is authorizing the court to create a common law of constitutional law based on current concerns, not what those 18th century guys were worrying about. In short, let's not let the dead bury the living. Well, why don't you take a hike? The Constitution of the United States is really about the only thing we've got standing between us and wholesale mowing down of the American public, although they are trying hard to do it. And of course, as you know, on these shows, we talk a lot about the creeping genocide that's going on and what they are doing, most particularly to the elderly and to the disabled, the genocide that's occurring. And it is a genocide. And I want to go back to something here that I know it sounds redundant and it almost has gotten to the point of being worn out. But let's look at Nazi Germany. We are implementing the same thing here, eugenics. We are implementing the same plan. We've just sanitized it, whitewashed it, polished it up, and made it sound benign. But we're doing the exact same thing that Hitler did. We're going in and we are taking out all of the elderly, and we are taking out the disabled, and we are taking out children. And we're doing it in a number of ways. Right now it's being done under hospice, and I'm getting a lot of static kickback there from somebody. Hold on here a second. Okay, that was Luann. Luann, you're picking up a lot of static on your line. Luann Fleming is with us from Hidden Truth Revealed. She's with us. She's got a lot of static on her line there, if you could call back in. But anyway, as I was saying, we are doing exactly the same thing. They are dispensing with the elderly. Where they used to go in and just simply mow them down, we can't do that anymore because, you know, somebody might say something. So we put them into a medical system that creates the medical conditions that will call for futility of care and end of life. Then they put them into palliative care. And what I mean by creating medical conditions is that what they are doing is starving and dehydrating people, even if it's slowly, even if they don't have like the feeding and hydration tubes, even if they don't have that. What they are doing is withholding food and hydration till they create the medical conditions necessary to say, well, geez, they've deteriorated such a point, you know, we just don't want to take care of them anymore. And then the closer is sent in to deliver the kill shot. Now, I was looking today to try and find things that might apply to this, and I was looking most specifically for things in the government that would allow this, and I got to, it's called debt.org. It's called America's Debt Help Organization, and I'm looking at what hospice does and what, you know, blah, 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 blah. Boy, it's just wonderful. And but it says here in 2010, which was the most recent statistics I've been able to find so far, it says routine home care is 146 a day, continuous home care 855 a day, an inpatient respite 151, general inpatient care 652. It goes on, and but what the point is, this program has, let's see, it says children with disabilities or adults who meet Medicaid's financial eligibility criteria are fully covered for end-of-life care. Medicare beneficiaries who are dual eligible for both programs, which amount to approximately 20% of all Medicare beneficiaries, can have Medicaid cover costs that Medicare doesn't cover, such as outpatient prescription long-term care. And but they go on and they tell all of this stuff that, it, you know, it says Medicaid and Medicare's hospice services are almost identical. And the patient must be certified to have 6 months or less to live and must receive services from a Medicare certified hospice facility or agency. And it says, however, it can vary state to state. But when you look at this, the numbers they quote here, in comparison, total hospice spending for Medicare in 2010, like I say, this is the most recent stats I could get, was $13 billion, with an average cost of approximately $10,700 per patient. Medicare does not limit payments to hospice care for individuals, but imposes an aggregate cap for agencies of about $24,500 per beneficiary. Now, when we talk about that, what we're talking about is the amount that will be spent on, say, your hospital stay and any medications they give you, which, of course, were numerous and prolific, and any treatments they may give you. So, and all of this is with a time clock running on it, so that you have these two 90-day, separate 90-day periods you can be in hospice, followed by multiple 60-day periods that are unlimited. And this is where we see the hospital bouncing people out, putting them in a cooperating nursing home who starts the Medicaid time clock, and then bounces them back to the hospital so they can start the clock over again. And so we far exceed the amount of money that they said they would pay, because you can collect this $24,500 numerous times. And that's a good deal, don't you think? And it said one of the 2.5 million Americans who died in 2011, 80% were Medicare beneficiaries at the time of death. So they're taking us out at the rate of about 2.5 million a year. I don't know how scary that is to you, but that actually scares me to death. And it says Medicare's hospice benefit has been in place since 1982. It pays for hospice care and services for anyone with a serious illness whose doctor certifies that he or she has 6 months or less to live and who agrees to forego life-saving or potentially curative treatment. So watch those durable power of attorneys for medical directives, okay? Because they are being reworded to say that you summarily prior to anything being in any condition that says you might be, you know, in bad shape, what it does is it gives an advance directive allowing hospice or even just medical personnel at the hospital to step in and say, hey, they're done. And you've already agreed to have all treatments withheld. You've already agreed that you don't want any life-saving measures taken. You don't want anything done. So be careful of that. Be careful of the wording of these medical health care directives, because that could come back to bite you. And then, of course, Carly talked about having the hospice revoked. And I think, you know, many of you have already found that since she announced it on her show last week, that you can file this revocation of hospice. And you need to do that. I would include it as part of your medical health care directive. Just have a prohibition on hospice. You don't want hospice. Anyway, and by the way, Carly will be back next week with her show. She'll be on Tuesday night. She'll be back with her first guest. So we're all looking forward to that. And just so everybody knows, her pilot show that took place on Thursday night after Tuesday, we had no service here. That show hit big, and it has pulled a lot of interest from a lot of places, and this is going to be a very important show in the future. This is something that's very necessary. People need to know what a danger and threat hospice represents, and not just hospice. You can be in severe danger just going into your hospital. Once you're in there, and that's it, please let me remind you again, on those admission forms, don't let them do the back of the monitor is to you and you can't see what you're signing. Sign on the little pad. It just gives us permission to treat you and admit you. Make them that off and you sign the hard copy. And you go through that admission form or that treatment form from your doctor and look for the word biologics. Because what this says is they can arbitrarily administer vaccines. They can do experimentation on you. They can take blood, they can give blood, they can do whatever they want, and they don't have to tell you anything. So keep that in mind as you're rolling around there. But anyway, we've got several people with us tonight. Carly is with us. Say hello, Carly.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. Hey. Hi. And Luann's with us. Say hello, Luann. She's not talking. And I see why, too. Her microphone isn't open. She had got it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the Marty Oakley Show. If we don't mess up, nobody can. Luann, you on there?
I'm here. Okay. That little button.
And we also have Brian Kinter. Say hello, Brian. He's not talking either, and I got his mic open. You see how this is how it goes on my show. That's just the way it is. And anyway, but we're gonna be talking about many, many things this evening. And what I want to start off with is basically what I premised the show with, and that is the growing genocide of the elderly and the disabled. Now, one of the worst cases we have seen to date has been the Anastasia Adams case. Her sister Yolanda Bell fought just a gruesome fight trying to save her sister. And ultimately, thanks to the medical conditions created by the hospital out there in Virginia, that was Inovia, she, of course, died. And I say, of course, because that was the intent. She was down to 82 pounds. She had been injured repeatedly with no repairs. What that woman suffered before she finally left this world was just an incredible injustice. And recently I found out from Yolanda that shortly after Anastasia passed, someone from the nursing home tried to open an account, tried to get either a credit card or a loan in Anastasia's name. And she got that stopped. But apparently this isn't the first time this has happened at that facility. But this is what we're up against. We have been commodified. And if you think that is an outrageous statement, you have to look at this, step back and look at the trafficking of the elderly. And this is human trafficking. They are trafficking the elderly through these probate courts, through these hospitals. The hospitals now, like in Anastasia's case, have their own guardians on staff, ready to go. Gee, I wonder what you need those for. And they will guardianize you in a heartbeat. They can do that because you won't agree to what they want to do. You won't agree to discharge. You ask for a second opinion. And this is what happens. You get guardianized, or the victim does, gets guardianized. And now you have no control at all. That guardian's working for the hospital. Yes.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, really. I didn't. But I really wanted to know about this. The second opinions. What if you don't tell the doctor? Are people telling, you know, what are they doing? Are they tracking people in a database that are getting second opinions? Or
in order to get one, most times when they ask for a second opinion, they're in a medical facility. Okay, they're in a hospital setting. Right.
Yeah.
Or they're in a doctor's office, and they'll say, but mostly it's in a hospital setting, I want to get a second opinion. I'm not sure of what you're saying. I'm not sure that this is the right thing. And of course, like in your own case, you find out that it's not just a misdiagnosis. It's an intentional misdiagnosis.
Right.
And
yeah,
immediately the system kicks in. When did we get to the point that you couldn't question a doctor? You know, when did we get to the point when you did not have the right to ask for somebody else to look at the facts of what's going on and tell you what their thoughts were on it? When did this become a crime? And obviously it is. We see, especially with young children, that they have in the hospital, especially if they have any kind of a genetic disorder or anything like that, if the parents ask for a second opinion or try to move them to another facility, they are immediately guardianized. And they're held there. And the worst part of that is 80 to 90% of those children are either Black or Hispanic. Now, there's a clue there. We just don't know what it is just yet. But I think that was outed the first time with Justina Peltier out there at Boston's Children's Hospital. She was used to going to Tufts. She had mitochondrial disease. She was doing quite well, but she had a bad episode. Her parents called Tufts. They said, Boston's Children is closer. Take her there, and then we can have her transported. They took her there, and the doctors, without testing or anything else, said, she doesn't have mitochondrial disease. It's all psychosomatic. They held her hostage for a year. And by the time the parents got her back out of there, she was no longer able to walk. She's wheelchair bound now. She had been forcibly medicated for conditions she did not have, and the treatment for her mitochondrial disease was thrown by the wayside. Of course, Boston Children's was never held accountable for the damage they did to this girl, but hey, what the hell. But this is going on across the country, and it has become such a problem.
Tonight, so you can definitely go.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. There's no hurry.
Hello? Well, we got somebody on here that's choking up.
We got somebody on there.
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's this one here. I'm going to close that down. This is actually, you know, what we're faced with. People have become afraid to go to their doctor. And I don't know how many of you have gone to your doctor's office, and if they said, well, you know, this is wrong, and I want you to take this medication, and you say, no, I'm not taking that. That drug will cause me more damage than it will do any good. And watch them get mad. And when you tell them what the drug actually does and what you know about it, you get the, you're a conspiracy theorist. You've been on the net. Yes, I have, actually. I went to Johns Hopkins, the FDA, CDC, Tufts, University of Minnesota. Yes, I've been on the net. Where have you been? And another thing I like to do these days, too, is to print off, like on these medications and vaccines, print off what they admit about them and what the adverse effects are and what these, like with the fluoroquinolones. These are chemo drugs. This is Cipro, Levaquin. They are chemotherapy drugs. They were manufactured to fight the infection caused by chemotherapy, which, of course, as you know, kills everything. And when you added the drug to the chemotherapy, people were dying faster than they could realize their projected profit. So they had the FDA, they paid them $5 million to fast track it, and they had them put out just as a general antibiotic. But they killed the mitochondria in your cells. Your body can no longer produce red blood cells with mitochondria in it. Your body can no longer make vitamin D on its own. And it's not to be prescribed to people over 60, but they do it all day long. And it's not to be prescribed either of those drugs in coordination with corticosteroids like prednisone. There's a good drug there. That's killed a fair number of people. We kept keep using that. And NSAIDs. They do it all day. Not to be prescribed for urinary tract or sinus infections. Commonly prescribed. Mm-hmm. And yet nobody's held accountable.
Nobody.
Commonly. Yeah, nobody is held accountable.
Oh, my God.
And so, I have come to view this, and Luann, I'm going to hear your thoughts on this.
Right.
I have come to view this as a form of backdoor genocide. These drugs are killing people. These drugs are literally killing people. Yeah. Go ahead.
I totally agree with you, and it's sad to see in our society what's going on, and it's actually quite frightening. I've been talking to all kinds of people in our state and other state, and I was following this other story. Her name was Tara Green, and she's the mother of Crystal Sullivan. Have you heard of that story?
Yes. Mm-mm. Go ahead.
Yes. She's also in the same hellish nightmare as everybody else, but I got like five stories that came to me in one day, and I was getting confused. I was like, oh, my gosh, who is this? You know, and it's really disheartening to find out that this is our family members going through this.
Yes.
These are our people we've loved our whole life. You're even frightened to take them to a doctor anymore.
Yes.
You know, and it's sickening. To me, it's disgusting, and we have to put our heads together to figure out what we can do about it, or is it too late? I don't even know anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have the answers to that anymore. You know?
Well, with me, what I think, and, you know, we talked about this earlier, what I'm thinking myself is this idea of going to these Congress critters and these other people that are political appointees and whatever else and talking about, oh, I got a meeting with so-and-so and I met with so-and-so and I was in their office. I don't give a damn. What did it come of it? Nothing. And they're not going to do anything. They know the system that's in place. And this gets down to what I've talked about many times before. A lot of the problem here regarding the elderly has to do with the money owed to Social Security by the federal government. And it has taken now almost $4 trillion in surplus off Social Security. And it has no way and never intended to pay it back. Mm-hmm. And here we are. The boomers are retiring.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting rid of us at the rate of $2.5 million a year. Really? That'll offset that debt, won't it?
Right.
Peggy Dupree, if she comes on, had sent me a piece the other day about them retitling Social Security federal benefits.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't federal benefits. This is our private invested insurance for our retirement that you stole, you asshole. Excuse me. Anyway, I'm sorry.
So anyway, Marty, I also talked to Tara today, and she said she might be calling in. Okay, and
okay.
She'll be. I think I give you her phone number, so
yeah.
she can also talk about what's going on. It's oh my gosh, these stories just really get to me. You know, they really do.
Yeah.
But you are exactly right. It's a genocide. It's elder class genocide. It's younger class genocide. It's happening, people. We've got to wake up everybody we know. We've got to spread the word, and the only way we can get anything accomplished, I believe, is exposing these people, you know, exposing what's going on, you know, and keep talking about it. Don't ever stop talking about it.
Right.
I just don't know what else to do.
We cannot – this is a system that was constructed arbitrarily, like I say. You cannot fix this. It is not fixable. You can't go in and tweak it and make it work. It's not going to work. because the end result is still the same. So I figure that we're at the point, since we can't get anybody in the federal legislature, you know, House, Congress, or anywhere to do a damn thing, and we can't get anybody locally to do anything, I think what we need to do is start a citizens' movement to strike down these statutes in total. And then we need to come with secondary bills holding these people who have committed the crime of human trafficking to profit themselves, these professional predatory guardians, these damned attorneys, get them. You know, somebody said, well, you can't pass an ex post facto law. Yes, you can. They did it with the FISA law, the telecom law. They sure did. They went back and backdated it. Sure, we can do that. And I'll use that as an example if they tell me I can't. You did it on the federal level. Of course I can. And you set the precedence. So, and that's what all of our law now is case law precedence. So this is, I think, is a two-pronged attack. Number one, that demand those statutes be struck down in total. They are an assault on the public. This is a genocide. It is planned genocide. And the people that have helped set it in place and the people who help keep it running by their silence, if no other reason, those people somehow think they're going to be exempt from this. And I got a newsflash for you. No, you're not. Because when you get to a point where somebody sees you're vulnerable and you've accumulated all of this money and these assets while you were in office, because you went in there broke and you came out a millionaire, how'd that happen? But anyway, somebody will finger you. Somebody will look at you and think you're a prime target. So don't think you're exempt from this. It ain't going to happen. I'll see to it doesn't happen if I have to become a guardian myself. But this is just, do you understand what I'm saying? We can't negotiate with government because they don't have our best interest at heart. They're watching to make sure this system runs nonstop to get rid of as many of us as possible. We see the same thing happening at the VA. We're drugging these military people to damn death. And they're saying, well, it's 22 a day are committing suicide. No, they're not. You drugged them to where their heart stopped.
Right.
That's not suicide. That's premeditated murder. That's abuse of your oath as a doctor. And this is an abject refusal to honor your commitment to these people, that promise you made that if they got wounded or messed up doing all this crazy crap you want them to do, you turned them into a killer, and then you expect them to come home and just pick up where they left off. They can't do it. So you drug them because I said it costs you a few bucks right now to drug them. But when you offset that, if you cause them an early death, you've saved 20, 30, 40 years of medical care that you promised them.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, it's happening on many, many levels. If you go to the vaccine thing, we have an infertility rate as a result primarily of vaccines of about 57% now. So we're not reproducing a population to replace the die-off. What do you think's going on here? And if you look at any one of these things as an isolated thing, it doesn't seem like much. It's when you look at them as a collective whole that you start seeing this pattern that is absolutely terrifying. Ladies and Brian, we've got Tara Green has joined us. Tara, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, you've got a really horrific story, issue going on there. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and then tell us what's going on?
My name is Tara Green. I'm a mother of three individuals, a 25-year-old developmentally delayed daughter, Crystal Sullivan, whom we're referencing, who also has epilepsy. Crystal's been completely normal. Well, she's very high functioning, well, prior to this, she was very high functioning, very capable of doing everything for herself. She's gone through high school. She has a brother that's 24, Gregory, and she has a sister that's 16, Christine. All of my children have been phenomenal children, and we find ourselves 2 days after the 4th of July in the hospital because Crystal woke up blind. The short end of the story, so many things happened while Crystal was in the hospital. We had several diagnoses of PRESS, which is post-reversible encephalopathy syndrome, urinary tract infection-induced encephalopathy syndrome, hyperammonia, just numerous amounts of diagnoses, but nothing to narrow down why all these things continued to happen. So at this point, I started doing my own research on the NIHM and some other governmental websites and bringing it to the doctor's attention, which at the time they were saying, okay, yeah, this is good stuff, you know. And then after they changed Crystal's medication and allegedly she was completely incoherent, and it could have been a number of things, but I nailed it down once they stopped the medication for the urinary tract infection and all the other stuff to the medication that she was currently receiving, which was Dilantin, phenytoin. And I told them that her diagnosis, prescription must be entirely too high because my baby was still screaming, scratching, pulling out IVs, screaming in the middle of the night, I don't want to die. I mean, horrible for a mother to witness. 2 months I was off for the summer to aid and assist my daughter. And I'm at the hospital every day, and I kept trying to make them understand that this is not right. This is not normal Crystal behavior. So after all of this took place, we ended up getting a transfer because they wanted to give her another medication that ultimately caused her to be completely paralyzed on her left side, allegedly. And then she started having tachycardia on August 13th in the middle of the night, 13th, 14th. And so they were deciding they were going to give her the medication all over again after many tests were ran, many exams were done, and they came up with absolutely nothing. So when she got that next morning, the nurse was getting ready to give her this medication. Although I had requested to speak with the neurologist, my daughter was, I wasn't there. I was with my other daughter getting her prepared for school. And when I got there, my son kept calling me stating, Ma, you need to get here immediately. They're going to give her this medication, even though they know it's making her sick. So I got there and the charge nurse was standing in the door looking out for me. And the other nurse was at the computer trying to hurry up and scan the medication into the system. So at the end of this whole fiasco, I ended up getting a transfer to Jewish, who I did not know at the time was pushing UC's agenda. Well, we got to Jewish, and on one day, the nurse left my baby's IV out, and there was a Soyuz 10 in the chair next to her. And I addressed her, called her on the nurse's light, and she came in, and I asked her, Evelyn, you know, why is my baby sitting in here with the Soyuz pamper? Oh, well, I had an emergency, and I just had to run real quick. I was coming back to clean her up. So I wasn't aware that Crystal's IV was hanging out. My 16-year-old made me aware of it and said, Ma, look at her IV. So I'm like, at this point, Evelyn, why is her IV? She pulled that out. Now, mind you, I told you that her complete left side was paralyzed. Well, the IV was in her right arm, so there was no way that she could have pulled that IV out of her arm. I'm sorry, guys.
That's okay. That's all right. Take a deep breath there. Just take a minute. You're among friends.
Okay, Tara.
You okay?
So come the next morning, Hamilton County DDS came in to speak with me, stating they were coming to talk on Crystal's behalf, and, you know, we want to just find out what's best for Crystal and da-da-da-rat-da-rat. So I'm like, okay, that's fine, but I don't really want to make any decisions without my child's approval, first and foremost. She's been in the hospital for a month and a half currently, and she wants to go home. She wants to see her dog. She wants to see her pawpaw, like she wants to see her siblings. And so he's like, well, you know, there's no rush. You can have time to think it over. The 22nd, I call up to the hospital that morning when I got off of my PM route, and they stated, oh, her nurse was Kathy at the time. Oh, Crystal's been discharged. And I'm like, what? She's completely paralyzed on the left side. And I've been asking them, can they do a motor exam, EMP, so we can figure out if she'll ever have mobility in that left side again. Well, I don't know. I'm just telling you what the doctor said. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm on my way. I get to the hospital, and my daughter's laying in a bed with no sheets on her bed.
What?
So I'm like, why is my child laying in a bed with no sheets on her bed? Well, this is a therapeutic bed, and we do it all the time. We don't have to have sheets on this bed. I said, well, Crystal's been here for a week. There's never been a time that there's been no sheets on this bed. This is very unsanitary. There are stains in this bed. This is not correct. So she gets to going in, and so the charge nurse, Kristen, at the time, called the police on me.
For what? What did you do, dear?
Well, from what she's saying, from what the court said, I assaulted physically and mentally a nurse. This is their
what?
Allegations against me.
Oh, my gosh. Typical attack.
Yeah.
So they kept me from the hospital on the 22nd. The 23rd, they went and filed for ex parte guardianship. So I was no longer able to see my child.
Now, let me explain quickly here. Because I know somebody's going to start missing. What does ex parte means? It means a hearing that is held without notice to the victim or their representative, in this case, Tara, to benefit the side that is presenting the charge in front of the judge. It is solely to benefit those people. That's what ex parte is. So go ahead.
So my dad went up on the 23rd, and Crystal didn't have an IV. They weren't administering any care. She was completely coherent. So the 22nd evening, after I finished speaking with DDS, because I did leave that portion out, and I spoke with DDS for a few, they called me into a room. Let me de-escalate the situation. And I'm like, I didn't know that there was a situation. However, okay, is my child going to be safe? And I have all of this on recording now. So he's like, yeah, she'll be fine, and this and that and the other. So we went in this room, and we talked for a while, and then my dad came up. So he goes out to take a call. His name was Chase. He goes out to take a call. He comes back in very apologetic. I'm so sorry, Miss Green. I'm so sorry to have to inform you this, but Crystal's been taken to Children's Hospital for genetic testing. I'm like, what?
Oh,
with who?
God.
At this point, the 22nd, they didn't even have guardianship over her. So they've taken her over to Children's for genetic testing. However, Children's sent her back because
what did they want genetic testing for, Tara? What did they want genetic testing for? What were they testing for?
They were trying to find out what kind of seizures that Crystal is having. I knew what kind of seizures Crystal was having prior to all the medication. She's got partial onset seizures. She's always had partial onset seizures. She's always only had one side of her body to start jerking.
Okay.
So he says, you know, I have some more information. And I'm like, what now? Well, they sent her over there in a gown, even though she was discharged and she still had an IV in her arm. So they have to bring her back here to Jewish and take the IV out and try to make another appointment.
God.
Oh, wow.
So they brought her back.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm still here. They brought her back, and I went to see her. Chris called the police on me again. So the sheriff asked, you know, so is it possible that she can come back tomorrow to see her daughter? You know, there's got to be a length of time, da-da-da-rat-da-rat. So she told him 24 hours. However, my dad and them went up that morning. My sister, my daughter went the 22nd night. When they got there the 22nd night, they hadn't fed Crystal, and the cafeteria was closed. It was after 7:30 p.m.
Why didn't they feed her?
I guess they must have forgot. Who knows?
Yeah, they're starting to.
All of that used to be my responsibility. My family did all of that. We ordered all her meals. We gave her all her showers. I washed her hair. I gave her everything that she needed to have until they said that my son could not come up anymore because he sexually inappropriately touched his sister. The allegations in court were he laid in the bed with her. He rubbed her hair. He kissed her on her neck, and either he put her fingers in his mouth or she put his fingers in her mouth, something of the sort. But,
boy,
they have dehumanized my entire family. They have slandered every one of ours' names. So all of these allegations, they still, as of August 23rd, have yet to substantiate. But we can't see my child. No one is able to see her at this point because they're stating that they've got video footage of me pulling out an IV and inappropriate behavior on my entire family and all of Crystal's friends. So she's currently in UC.
Yeah, that's called incommunicado detention. This is a violation of the Human Rights Convention out of the UN. It's globally recognized as torture. And the isolation from her family is considered torture. You not being able to see her. Yep. Well, and you know the thing is, Tara.
Yep.
Go ahead. And the thing is, you know, they don't have any such videos. If they had them, they would have produced them. They'd have had it broadcast up on Times Square. They don't have that.
Yeah.
That court knows they don't have that. And
yeah,
yet
they
allow them to stand up making these allegations that are unfounded, for which they have absolutely no evidence, and that are a pure outright lie, and that judge doesn't call them on it, doesn't hold them accountable. Nobody does. Nobody does.
I assume, and this is just me making allegations because I'm not completely sure of it, but they all seem like friends. All of them have had dealings for a very, very long time. And when I come in there, I mean, this other magistrate has this lawyer on speed dial. Like, she pushed one button and had her on the line. So it's just ridiculous. And I'm like, is the news a conflict of interest? Supposed to be telling her what moves I'm getting ready to make? Like, I filed a complaint against the Guardian. She called her immediately and pretty much read everything that I stated in my complaint.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Okay. I've got a couple of emails here tapping in. People are asking where exactly you're located, Tara. Where is this taking place?
Hamilton County, Cincinnati, Ohio.
State? In Ohio, okay.
Ohio.
All right. Yeah.
Well, I've heard a lot about Ohio lately, I tell you.
Brian, are you on? He's on there, but he's not talking. And
I'm here, Marty. I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here, Marty.
Okay.
Yep,
all right. We've got another.
She's in the sexual capital of the world, man, is Ohio. And the whole damn judiciary is what a joke. What a farce.
Yep.
But we
yep.
need to get connected, her and I do, because I'm saying that the court unilaterally, it doesn't matter whether it's in a probate court, whether it's in, you know, domestic relations court, whether it's in a criminal court, the whole damn system here. Maureen O'Connor runs one of the most well-funded, well-organized criminal racketeering organizations anywhere in the state, is our judicial system here in the state of Ohio.
Tara, so. The person speaking is Brian Kinter, and he runs Judicial Accountability Movement, and he's based in Ohio. So this possibly a resource to get you some help, get you some exposure here. Holy crap.
What is your name again? I'm sorry, Brian.
Kinter, K-I-N-T-E-R. Let me give you my phone number because it's out there everywhere. And if you get a chance, you give me a call. It's 937-926-5497.
Couldn't be in better hands than Brian.
There you go.
Bulldog. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bulldog.
One of my very favorite out there.
Yep. So you've got a tremendous resource there, Tara, to help you fight this and support and backup. This is a huge group, and Brian, like I say, is a bulldog. He'll get on him, and that dog bites.
We don't stop. Once we get a whole lot of ass, we just keep chewing. So,
yep, there you go. Tara, where are you at on this now?
Well, I filed an objection a month or so ago. So the Judge Winkler, he denied my objection. So at this point, I'm in the process of filing a appeal.
Okay.
It sounds like Anastasia Addison.
Did you say Judge Winkler?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got two other cases with his name on it here in Ohio.
Yeah, he's really, well, I don't know. I'm just going off of what I've been researching. Him and my daughter's guardian and his brother and his wife are all friends on Facebook. So that kind of, to me, says friends.
Yeah, collusion. Yeah.
Collusion.
And I don't know how bad this has to get. I seriously don't know how bad this stuff has to get. People, you can't take the position anymore. Well, it didn't happen to me, so I can't be bothered with it. This could happen to you at any moment.
Yes.
This
Anybody.
Could happen to
I
your child.
Embarrassment. I think because I didn't tell my story when it began to happen because I was embarrassed for having these allegations. And I kept saying to myself and beating myself up, stating that I've been a mother for 25 years. Now I have to justify my parenting. It bothered me so bad because I felt fault. I was almost like being abused in an abusive relationship. You know, a lot of times we come to guilt because we feel like we could have done something different. And I did. I beat myself up mentally for at least a month.
Yeah.
Don't be embarrassed.
You. Yeah,
right.
You're a nurse person.
Don't do it
this
no more.
Has happened to
you. Know what's going on
and
now.
Exactly, and the thing is, this is a standard method of operation: the levying of these horrendous charges for which there is no evidence. They can't produce any evidence other than somebody else they've hired standing up and saying, "Oh yeah, I saw that too." No, they didn't see anything. And they're allowed to do this time after time. You're never allowed to produce any evidence to refute what they say. That judge won't accept any evidence that counters what they say. They won't accept it. And this is how the system works. This is what I'm saying. This whole system needs to be collapsed. It needs to be done away with. You cannot fix it. You cannot fix it. You have got to get rid of it. This is just another example of this genocide that is going on, and this is genocide. They want rid of us, and while they're getting rid of us, they're bringing in all these foreigners to take our place. Now, I know I'm not politically correct in saying that, but being a confirmed political atheist, I don't give a damn. They are bringing in all these people from countries that they claim are our enemies and want to kill us. And they're bringing them into the country. They're allowing people to flood across that southern border and come into our communities and destabilize them, destabilize the economy, drop the wages. the whole nine yards. The jobs disappear. I mean, they're being worked, but they're being worked by people who are getting paid under the table or working for less than minimum wage. And so, but we are being replaced. If you want to see this in history, go to the 1920s, the Holodomor. This is exactly what Stalin did when he killed off the Ukrainians, 22 million of them. He killed his own people off and at the same time brought in all these replacement populations from other places, the unemployed, the criminals, everything, brought them in, treated them and pampered them like they were really something special while he killed off his own people by starvation. And then as soon as the Ukrainians were out of the way, he turned on the people he brought in with a vengeance, which, of course, resulted in a huge, huge revolution. I would like to see a revolution happen here. I don't think we have to get to shedding blood necessarily, but we're going to have to do something. The days of sitting by while this is expanding and carrying on are over. And like I say, going back again, you cannot go to the people that either constructed this system or who helped keep it running and expect them to fix this. They are not going to. There's too much money changing hands. Those politicians that you love so much, you know, they talked to me, and I had a meeting with them. As soon as you left, somebody rolled in with a bag of money, and it's from one of the agencies or organizations that you are battling, like the Bar Association, the National Guardianship Association, the College Probate Judges, that Wings outfit, which is a freaking joke, but they're rolling in there with money. Medical providers whose stock and trade is just exactly what's happening with you, Tara. They're making their money playing the time clock, collecting as much from Medicare, Medicaid as they can. The medical industry is defrauding Medicare of $30 to $60 billion a year. It is not the claimants who are doing that. It is the providers who are doing that. The problem lies with them. There again, we have an abject, absolute failure of Congress to control the situation, to go after these people who are doing this. But the reason they don't is to get rid of us. The system is set up to get rid of us. And you have to, I know that sounds like conspiracy theory stuff. Get a clue here. How many people around you have been caught up in this system and disappeared?
Exactly.
How many people? And what do you think, because it didn't land on your doorstep, it don't matter? It isn't happening? Well, you must have done something wrong. No, you don't have to do anything wrong.
Nope.
You don't have to do anything wrong. You just have to be targeted. So how much of this are we going to put up with? How much? And again, going back to, I don't want to get a bunch of emails about joining this group or joining this organization, and we talked to so-and-so, and we have a meeting. I don't give a flying flip. What did it get you besides nothing?
Nothing. Everybody's been shutting doors in my face. Disability Rights Ohio. I talked to Cecil Thomas, who was going to call Disability Rights. Everyone that I've talked to, everyone is saying there's nothing we can do. Unfortunately, Ms. Green, there's nothing we can do. We can't help you. We're so sorry. We wish.
No, I know. Mm-hmm. Jesus. But if that was our child, I wonder what their response would be.
And this is exactly what I stated, you know. And then I go into these courts, and I'm kind of angry, but I'm not angry. I'm just kind of frustrated with the process. And I go and I apologize. I apologize for my behavior, but this is my child. They know this. So I shouldn't even be apologizing in the first place, because they know this. And if it was their child, they would have to act in the same manner. My child has been with me for 25 years. Disability, Hamilton County DDS has done absolutely nothing on Crystal's behalf. Everything that has been done for Crystal, myself and my dad and my family have done that. They've done nothing. Uh-huh. They helped me with Crystal for 25 years.
Wow.
All of a sudden,
Brian,
come and tell me that I'm being a bad parent. If I was being a bad parent, how come you didn't catch that at 12?
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things is that the state, and that's one of the things that we've been pushing on the issues here in the state of Ohio, is that we're making a claim that the state has been negligent in being able to bring forth the evidence to solidify their claims. You know, you cannot just make an arbitrary election of choice to say something and have no evidence to back it up.
Right.
What happened to the due process, though? They're criminalizing us before they've even taken us through the due process. How
we don't have
they don't have to under statute. They don't have to give you due process.
We have none.
It's not a court. It's not a court. It's a tribunal. It's a tribunal. It's not a court, number one.
Exactly.
Number two is that what are you, when you say violating due process, okay, well, who makes the determination whether or not it's been violated? Another judge, you know, and you're sitting there and you're saying you can smell shit. You know, you don't have to be, you know, have it shoved down your throat to know when you're being fed a shit sandwich, okay? In the court, that's all they do. They hand you two pieces of bread with fecal matter and says, regurgitate peanut butter because it's more pleasing to our ears. And you're sitting there saying, no, you fed me a shit sandwich. You violated my rights. You violated due process. You've stolen my children. You've done all these things. And yet you give no account for how you derived the conclusions and what you reach. If that's not the definition of a rocket, I don't know what the hell is.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Brian. And that's the whole thing here. You're dealing with racketeering, criminal racketeering, disguised as, you know, for the benefits of the child. No, it's for the benefit of the people doing it. It's it's for their benefit. There is a money system in place here. And I've said this before, I'll say it again. We are just a step away from the public auction block. This is no different than putting, you know, back in whenever, when we stood black people on the auction block and sold them to the highest bidder. This is exactly what's happening here, only, like I say, now we've sanitized it, whitewashed it, cleaned it up, and made it look all soft and fluffy. And but we're still selling you, but you're not supposed to know that that's what we're doing. Of course they are. They are getting
so
money from the federal government. Yes, it is. And I don't care how you slice and dice it, that's exactly what it is. The problem with our country is we have nothing left to sell. We have been deconstructed. We don't manufacture anything of any consequence. All these big corporations that just got these tax breaks, 70% of them use offshore accounts and have no intentions of coming back to this country and doing anything. And so we've got nothing left to sell. We've got nothing. We manufacture nothing. When they took apart our manufacturing base, they took apart the second largest income-producing sector in the country, the first being agriculture, and they're working hard to destroy that. There's nothing left to sell but us.
That's
but us. They have commodified us. They've broken us into sections. Either we will get caught in guardianship. We will have our children taken from us and traded and sold. They make a ton of money doing that, forcibly adopted out. We will put them in these medical facilities and milk Medicare, Medicaid, the insurance company, till they won't pay anymore. Then we get rid of them. In between all of this, we have put 3 million people in privatized prisons. And they're selling prisoner bonds on Wall Street. Get a clue here, people. Get a clue. We cannot keep dealing with this system as is, and we cannot fix it. As it is, it can be fixed. It was never meant to be fixed. We've got to destroy the system.
We've got to get rid of the system.
The question,
Marty, is how are we going to do that? I mean, it is like fighting the mafia. Okay, that's
it
the
is.
Fight. You know, and it doesn't. And, you know, I'm out here in Colorado, and it is an epidemic of nothing but racketeering going on in every direction. I mean, how do you take the system down? And that's what we're going to be basing our shows on and trying to figure out how we're going to start doing this. That's what we need to talk about. And I bring everybody we can out, every radio show host we can, everybody we know, put our heads together and figure this out.
Exactly. Well, the thing is, it's going to take the public getting up off their dead behinds and stepping out. And if they're not willing to do that, there's nothing we can do for them. Now, you can lead the charge. I can lead the charge. I'm not interested in who's king or queen. I don't give a darn. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take a public uprising to say, this is enough. This is enough. You're not doing this to us anymore. And until people consider activism and being proactive more than clicking like and share, that is not being an activist. That's a keyboard warrior. You've got to present yourself. You've got to stand up and be accounted. And until we can get the public to do that in great numbers, this is going to keep on going. Mm-hmm. And if I hear one more person say, well, you must have done something, or they wouldn't have done that. Oh, yes, they would. And when the thing is, when it gets to you and you didn't do anything, don't you come screaming to me.
Or your parents, or if it's your child, if it's your mother or father, then you understand our position and all the hell that we've gone through to get to this point.
That happened. Yes. That happened out here in Colorado, Marty. We had a case out here. I'm just going to say her name was Rose, and the guardian at litem.
Uh-huh.
We had a meeting the other day, and the guardian at litem says, "I cannot believe how horrible this is to put my father in a nursing home. I've been teaching this for 30 years, and I can't believe how painful it is." And I told her, "Yes, we've all been through that, and now it's your turn, you know." And I wanted to tell her more than that, because now. She's, what she did to all those other people is happening to her and her dad.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You.
Yeah.
You know,
and I wonder how that shoe feels on her foot. Yeah.
Right. It's on
you know.
Her now. You know?
Yep. And this is what I'm saying. These very people that have allowed this to happen created the situation so it could happen. Think somehow they're exempt from this. No, you're not.
Right.
No, you're not.
No.
Somebody will get around to you because there's a whole new class of predators coming up behind you. And
exactly.
That's the other thing. This whole thing is based on, it's considered the fastest growing cottage industry in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when human trafficking becomes the go-to business to make quick money, get a clue. Knock, knock, Pudd'nhead. Who do you think they're going to buy and sell next? Maybe your neighbor,
mm-hmm.
maybe your kids,
mm-hmm.
maybe your mom,
mm-hmm.
your dad, your husband,
mm-hmm.
your wife, somebody. This is what's going to happen. So eventually, you know, they're working their way through us. Like I say, we've been commodified. We've got to change that. As far as going to D.C., you might as well pee in the wind. There is no help there. And if I didn't learn one thing when I was out there in D.C., is this old adage about, you know, two wings of the same bird, that's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. These people... they're all on the same page. They're all taking you the same place. It's just which path are you going to take to get there?
Right.
It's going to produce the same thing. It is pointless to go to D.C. Nobody there is going to give you the time of day. And if they do, it's going to be with platitudes and murmurings. I'll look into it. Oh, I'm gravely concerned. Oh, yeah, I'll do so. Oh, this is terrible. Why haven't I heard about this before? What do you mean you haven't heard about it? We've been hammering your office for the last 2 years. Don't tell me you haven't heard about it.
Right.
And on the state level, it's the same thing. I had a friend here some years ago that ran for office. I was asked to and didn't want to. And my friend ran for office, and he won. And about 3 months later, you couldn't get through to him. I ran into him at a gathering and said to him, you know, what happened? You know, I thought you were going to make all these changes or at least attempt to and everything. And he said, you have to understand something, Marty. And I said, what's that? He said, see, he said, the people that financed my campaign, he said, see, he said, you know, I owe them. I said, really? And he said, so he said, you know, I kind of am beholden to them because, you know, otherwise I won't have any money for my next campaign. I said, so in other words, you were bought. Well, he said, you can't look at it like that. I said, how did you want me to look at it? You sold out. Well, how am I going to get reelected? I said, I don't know. Try running on your record. And he just looked at me. He said, well, he said, I see I can't talk to you. And I said, no, you can't. I said, my BS meter just went off. And but it just this is what I'm saying. There is no help. It is up to us in the public. You have got to stand up. You don't have to form a group. You don't have to form an organization. You don't have to do any of that mess. Stand up, for God's sake. And state clearly, this has got to change. This has to be stopped immediately. And I don't want to hear any of this stuff about phasing it out. Well, you know, Marty, this stuff like this takes years to change. No, it doesn't. We started how many wars on a dime and a lie? And over 25, 30 years, the pieces of legislation I've seen says becomes effective immediately upon passage. No, this doesn't take time. Doesn't take years. What you mean is you'll string it out for years if you do anything at all.
I agree.
I think with the new campaigns coming up, you know, for the midterms and all of that, I think one of the things we need to be doing is showing up en masse and saying, this is what we want from you as a commitment on this, and if you can't do that, either resign your office or stop your campaign.
Right, and if you do, and if you do any legislation, Marty, the thing I do legislation is to bring awareness, if nothing else, because the bills they're going to pass, no one's going to follow them anyway. But we're going to be doing some legislation here in Colorado, but I look at it more as not passing bills, but for an awareness program. You know,
right?
That's the only thing.
Well,
you can
and see, and the other thing is when you try to write legislation. And even if you get a sponsor, and you've seen this happen right there in Colorado, Luann.
How many times?
The bill that's written is good. It's good. It's
right.
Got teeth in it. But once it's tabled and calendared, that bill can be amended and changed 5,000 times, and they'll never tell you. And then it gets passed, and everybody's so happy until you read the bill, and it's watered down so bad, the best use for it would be in the bathroom.
Right.
And yet these politicians will walk around and as though they, you know, see what we did for you. No, you didn't do anything for me. You betrayed me.
Right. And you know
and
who always does that for your bill is the Bar Association lobbyists. You have there's a couple of people that came from the Judicial Performance Commissioners that were there testifying against the bill. You get old retired justices are going against any bills. It's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the bar lobbyists are lined up by the tons, and the probate attorneys are just so ready to go against your bill. And
yes.
You can just walking in the door, you know, we're like, uh-oh, this is not going well. And then that bill that we tried to pass was so watered down, it wasn't going to pass anyway. It
right.
was horrible.
Exactly.
Just horrible
it
what
is.
You go through.
It is, and you have no ways. This is what I'm saying. We've tried everything. You know, we've tried working with these politicians, both federal and state. I go back again to S-178, and I know that's being touted as, well, I'll take what I can get. No, I'm not a take-what-I-can-get person. That bill is going to be used as the law to herd more people into these guardianships. That bill is focused on the public, not on the professionals. There's no mention of professionals in there, of guardians, of attorneys or anything. There's no mention of them. And because they are not mentioned, they are not subject to the bill. It is focused, and when I talked to the DOJ, they admitted that it will be about perusing the public and looking for people who might be abusing a family member or a neighbor, something like that. That's what it'll be for. And seeing if that person who's being exploited needs to be in a guardianship. Well, I'm just sure they do. And another thing I want to reiterate is anything that's in motion in the state has been subject to a court of any in your state is prohibited by the DOJ from intervening in, just like SCOTUS can't intervene in it. It is considered to be the control and possession of the state once you step in that courtroom. So they can't intervene. That's state's business. Anyway, that's one of the little things they do, you know, to get themselves off the hook. So well, I can't do anything. This is not only separation of powers, but, you know, this is state's business. I said, I know. You can't do anything. And why are we paying you? But anyway, This is what we need to look at. Like I say, the day has passed. We tried it, Luanna. You've had a monumental effort there in Colorado trying to reverse this. Brian, out in Colorado, I know I'm surprised they haven't run you off the road or thrown you off a building trying to fight this system. Well, and I've had death threats and been followed up and down the road. They'll do anything to you. The retaliation is horrendous when they decide to do it. We have tried everything. We have tried working within the so-called law. We have tried working within the Constitution and bringing this to light. This is our right to be free of this. And we can't get anybody to act on it. These politicians, we're paying them to be a disservice to us. We are literally paying them to betray us. I don't know. If you go back to S-178, the whole center of that bill is about further funding and empowering, and then it lists 30-some agencies, the very agencies we've been fighting, that they're going to further empower and fund. That should have been your clue right there. This wasn't to help you. This was to close the loophole on the system. Then the second thing they did, after everybody screamed, where is the thing in here about, you know, guardianship? It was supposed to have been about guardianship, and instead this is about wire fraud and internet scams and all of that. We've already got laws on the books. That's all this bill was a reiteration of standing state and federal laws. That was the first clue there that we ain't going to do anything. But then they added the miscellaneous section at the bottom of it. And this was the unlawful ceding of lawmaking authority by the Congress of the United States to the DOJ. This is unconstitutional. Congress cannot discharge its duties to, especially what is nothing more than a contracted federal agency, and told them to write model legislation on this. Now, how much you want to bet nothing's going to come out of that about professional guardians and these fee-churning attorneys? Nothing's going to come out of that. So, you know, it's going to be focused on the public. And the main reason it's going to be focused on the public is that those family members have got to be gotten out of the way. They have to be dealt with, so they're shut up. So they quit interfering with the system. That's what this is going to be focused on. And they're going to take these people that they identify, and they're going to hold them out to the public and say, see? See what they did? And if you said, wait a minute, we've got a professional predator operating over here that has 400 people that they've guardianized, and these people are withering and wasting away from abuse and neglect and everything else, and you didn't do anything. Well, we don't want to talk about that. We're not talking about. We're talking about so-and-so down here that abused their elderly parent. We don't have any evidence they did, but we said they did, so that's just the way it is. Do you see what I'm saying? We cannot deal with this system anymore. Quit being, when you look at legislation, don't look at what is there, what was intentionally omitted that should have been there. What was the cry from the public to Congress? And that was, we needed a bill outlawing and holding criminally responsible these guardians and these attorneys. There wasn't a word in there about them. Wasn't a word in there about them. So you look at it not for what was there, what was intentionally omitted that should have been there. And that'll tell you exactly what their intent is. And it just, I don't know, I'm rambling. Go ahead. Luann, what's your thoughts?
Oh, my God. It's just, I had a case out here in Colorado that I want to touch on briefly. And I know exposing these people, the court officials, does help. And I'm going to say so because, like I said, we had a case out of here, and the guardian ad litem and the attorney showed up, and this girl that they were trying to take away both of her trusts or use the money or whatever they're trying to do about it, they took away her right to do anything. They have all of her money. She lives off a Social Security check. She's worth a lot of money. And, and she has two trusts, okay? She can't even get to her own money. So these attorneys walk in.
Right.
And she has a whole crowd full of people. She has her pastor there. She has all her friends there. And they just walked in like, what is going on? And she goes, well, we're all friends. Let's just talk about what's going on with my case. And I guarantee you, these people were just kind of scared that our group was there and a whole bunch of people were there. And they were telling her that we're going to help you out. We are going to be doing all kinds of things for you. You're going to be getting some of your money back. And the way that you expose this is to put them into the spotlight, and it does help.
Yes. So yes.
I wanted to touch on that on one accomplishment that we did do, because I had a lot of people. These people were actually scared of your group coming in. So I really wanted to point that out. But you also have to talk about, when you are talking about certain individuals, powers of attorneys, people or names, you also have to be careful about any defamation lawsuits, because I know a couple families that are going through that. So you also have to be careful of what you talk about with them in every direction. So you're
you're caught in between a rock and a hard place. You can't talk about them, but you can, but you have to do it in a way that they don't know you're talking about them.
Yeah.
Know? And
yeah.
It's crazy.
Well,
put into this situation, Marty. It's crazy that we're even talking about these problems today.
Yes. Well, it's what's insane about it is that this probably even exists. That's what's insane. That's the insanity. That we're even having to deal with this, and that we have a government that is part and parcel of what's going on. Brian, you've been sitting there quietly. What are your thoughts?
I always put myself on mute and just sit and listen and try to do multitasking because I'm always in the game here. I mean, the same thing, just like Luella's saying, is that I absolutely agree with the public embarrassment, you know, to go after it. But I think that works great for trial court judges and appellate court judges. I think once you get past the appellate court process, I think that when you start pointing out the inconsistencies of the Supreme Court justices, that number one, gaining a more significant voice across the state, not in just one little general locale. And one general locale, I think it works good for the trial court. But it's been my good faith experience that once you get up to the Supreme Courts and things, they just don't care. And I mean, and it depends upon each individual case. The more glaring the obvious is, and the more that you have to expose them, I believe that the court takes more of an action to try to ostracize you from all of your friends, your family, and everyone else. And they write fiction as though it's fact, and then it becomes fact because it's journalized into the record. And, you know, it's a hard nut to crack. But I do believe, just like Luell, I believe that we're seeing signs of this, you know, this shift of this swing of the pendulum. But I'm wondering how far out is it going to go, you know, and where's it gonna stop? But I firmly believe that we cannot reform what's presently in place. It has to be completely abolished and taken down, and we have to start over, and our Constitution guarantees us those rights to be able to do that when our government acts against its own people. Getting that nut cracked, I tell you, you know, I've got some pretty good boys and girls in the field that they swing some pretty big hammers, and we haven't been able to crack it yet, but we're still working on it. And, you know, I think in conjunction with the things that Luell's doing, that you're doing, you know, that so many people, Marty Lynch, Randall Stone, you know, Chris Hallett, there's so many people that are all taking whacks at this. Eventually, it has to crack. Everything has to change. You know, that's inevitable. Change is inevitable. And I truly believe that we're on the shift of this change. This is no different than what happened prior to the KKK Act, when they used to take innocent African-Americans out and lynch them. Everybody accepted it because it was status quo. It was the way it was. Women's suffrage, same thing. You know, it was status quo. And we realized just how ignorant that we really were as a society, and we made changes to rectify those egregious wrongs. And here the problem is that it's not going to come, you know, they're not going to just one day say, oh, well, geez, Marty, well, Brian, hey, you know, we made some mistakes and blunders. You know, it's going to come with a fight. I mean, they're not going to voluntarily surrender and say, oh, we've been doing this all for the state to be able to profit. You know, it's insidious. And I just wanted to add in here, if I could, real quick, is that, you know, right now we've been looking at four different courts. There's one in Costa Rica. There is that deals with human rights issues. There's one in France. There's one in Belgium, Germany. And there's one in Switzerland. And we've been trying to figure out, okay, where do we file? How do we file? Is our country and their country all part of the ICCPR? Is their country and our country both signatures to The Hague? Are their country and our country trying to draw the parallels between all of the different dynamics? Because there's all these different courts, and it's trying to navigate through all this crap to figure out where the hell you step without getting your damn leg blown off, you know? It's like a minefield. When you go into court, and I've always tell people, is that when you go to the court, you might as well sit back, get in an easy chair, you know, put in Hotel California, you know, because you can check in, but you can't check out. Because once it's the court, you get involved with the court, those bastards own you. They're going to take everything from you that they can, and they're going to push you through as much hell as they can simply because they can. And it's, you know, this isn't the United States of America that I grew up in believing in. It is the United States that I grew up in, but I was one of those foolish, naive, ignorant blobs, just like the vast majority of them out there, that always believe that you go to court, you tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, you can't help but be okay. You might not like their decision, but it's okay. But once you get embarked upon the journey and you discover all of the lies, the deceit, and the fact that you can't even present your evidence, it's like, it's insidious, Marty. It was absolutely insidious. All for the
I've heard from people in England, France, Hungary, and Germany. And they're all telling the same thing. Australia, New Zealand, they're doing the same thing in those countries. This is a global plan. It isn't just happening here. And it's, I think, accelerated in other countries like England. Was the pathway system was the groundwork for Obamacare and hospice. The hospice becoming the Grim Reaper. It was based on the experimental pathway system in London, England, and over the year's time, and that's a huge area, huge population, they offed 1,300 senior citizens using this futility of care, moving to palliative care, and then the closer comes in and ends everything just before the clock runs out and the money stops. And they, like I say before, people caught on to what they were doing. The pathway system is still operational in England. You have to learn to avoid it. In Germany, I heard from people over there that they claim, Merkel claimed that the elderly were costing the German economy too much money. So they started shipping them out, supposedly, to Southeast Asia, most notably Vietnam, to house them there. Of course, they didn't tell anybody they did that until after they did that. Only thing is, nobody knows where their relative is. Nobody knows if they're alive or dead. And you just don't know. You can't know where they're at, how they're being cared for. You can't communicate with them. You can't visit them. So my thinking is they didn't go anywhere except maybe to a crematorium. This is my thoughts. But this is happening globally. What passes for a court, what is euphemistically called a court, Brian is absolutely right. These are tribunals. And as such, they establish their own rules. They are not bound by the codes of evidence or the federal civil code of procedure. They're not bound by any of that. This is how they get away with refusing to take your evidence, refusing to challenge that predator guardian and those attorneys. This is how they get away with it. Then when they issue the report on the court, their little tribunal there, they claim the person was abandoned. Nobody wanted to take them. And here you've got the family standing, screaming, jumping up and down, screaming, we want them. We would give them back. And no, they were abandoned. Nobody spoke up and wanted them. And then nothing was presented to refute what the guardian and the attorney said. And no evidence was collected. They said it, that's all we need. They're never asked for evidence. This has got to stop. If you're going to steal someone's identity, which is what guardianship is, it is identity theft taken to the max. That person who just bought you now presents themselves as you, accesses all your assets, borrows money in your name, steals out of your bank accounts, out of your safety deposit box, raids your home, sells your property. They present themselves as you. This is identity theft without due process of law. If you're going to do this to someone, it should be in a court of law in front of a jury, and everything should be laid out. The family should be there or anybody supporting that person. That person should be allowed to speak for themselves. And the other thing here is, too, they are treated as if they committed a crime. But to get into civil court or criminal court, you must have suffered an injury. What injury did that guardian suffer or that a guardian's attorney suffer? None. They can't even claim an injury.
Right.
So how does this happen? How does this happen? And it's because it is a tribunal. They're not bound by any of the common things we would expect in a courtroom. And this is what happens to people when they come into these administrative tribunals. You think you know what the law is. You think you know how this should work. you think the law is on your side, and you're hit with this wall of corruption that is overwhelming. And everybody knows it is corrupt. The people that pay those people's paychecks know it is corrupt. And you don't have a rat's chance in a decon box of getting out of there with anything you thought you were going to get. Most especially your relative or whomever it is that you were trying to rescue from this. That's the last thing you're going to get, because there's money in them. There are old people and children that are disabled. There sure is. It's creating a thriving industry. We've got about 5 minutes left here. Luann, did you have any last words? Anything you wanted to say?
I've heard so many stories, and they are all about the same thing, and it's really sad that our families are going through this, but we have to put together on how to abolish probate. It's the only way it's going to work. We cannot keep going on the way we are. You know, identity theft, this is exactly what they're doing. They're going in. You might as well just shoot that person in the head, goodbye, and then they just take that person's money. They take their estate.
Yep.
They take their names. It's horrifying. And the only way we're going to get past this, abolish probate completely.
Yep.
That's the only way that
exactly.
You can't. It's like Brian said. You can't just fix it now. It's too far gone. You can't fix it.
Yes.
You know, it's like a glass that falls off the table and it falls onto the ground. You're going to try to put that glass back together. It's not going to happen. It's already broken.
No.
You know, it's not going
to
happen.
Well, the worst part of this was a system set up to operate exactly the way it does. And by the time it became into full force, it was too late then. And it has taken, well, I've been doing this 8 years, Luann, you know, it's like wading through cement, trying to get anything done. And I say, I've concluded the only thing that's going to change it is a public uprising. And I don't mean violence. We don't have to be violent. But just standing up and saying, okay, that's enough. You know, we've given you every opportunity to fix this. You won't. Strike down the system. Strike down the system. We're under threat here. This is a clear and present danger. Brian,
well, the problem is,
you
a
got
lot of
any
people
last
know,
words?
They go through a case of their own, and they don't understand what's going on. They know something's wrong. But when they hear from other advocates that you've been taken, your family's been taken, then that's when they all start coming in and wanting to work together. But it takes a lot of people, a lot of brains, a lot of people, like you said, don't just push a like button, but get out there and advocate in your state, nationally, whatever you got to do, stand up and fight as hard as you can. And we don't have to be violent about it. Just get out.
No.
Talk to people. Just get out and talk to people. You know?
Well, and somebody said something about they'll put you in a constitution-free zone, free speech zone. That's where they cordon you off and put you in. Anywhere you stand in this country is a constitutional zone. It is a free speech zone. Nobody has the right to corner you anywhere and say you can't speak except over here. Uh-uh. And that you need to demand that right also. But how about we have a politician free zone or a probate court free zone? Let's do that.
Right.
I think that would service us far better. Brian, any last words?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that everybody got on board. You know, Marty, you know that we're getting ready to have our book published, right? I hope that everybody had seen that. We put a thing out there. It's called Colonoscopy, An Inside Look at Assholes, and we're having all the judges' pictures put up there. So anybody that wants to join in, by all means, send us your pictures and your posts.
I love
all the
that.
Stuff that's
I don't
going
love
on.
That Brian Kenter, I tell you.
Yeah, I just think that it's horrendous, and I think that, you know, as we go through and we look at life and we see, and, you know, I listen to Luann, I listen to so many people, and I say that, you know, we're on the right path, you know. The question is that I'm like you. I don't think that it has to come to violence and, you know, bloodshed and things like that, but I fear that, you know, the words of Justice Scalia rings true when he wrote in the Wells decision and saying that, you know, it's up to the people. You know, the people have the power, but it's up to them to exercise the power. And we've sat on our hands for far too long, and we've handed over the power, and now they've got the power. Now they just continually run the racket because hey, we've already done this to so many, we're going to continually do it. And we're saying, this is a moral atrocity. This is generational genocide is what's being committed. And it has to change. It has to.
It
does. And I think just like it is with you, with Loretta, with so many people out there, everybody's looking for the answers. But I do believe that, you know, the more that we stand up and say, Lord, how am I doing? Look at me. Open me up. Look at me. We each do a self-examination that we can all come together and say, you know, let's take and let's share our stories and look at the common theme. And the common theme is the lack of oversight of our judicial.
Right. Okay. Yep. We got 10 seconds. We got to close down here. Remember what I tell you all the time. You cannot pick who comes into your life, but you can damn sure pick which window you throw them out of. We'll be talking again next week. See you, everybody. Thanks for joining in. Bye-bye.
Good night, everybody.